Larry.
Thank you. You will now be placed into conference.
To mute your line, press star 6. To unmute, press pound 6.
$1 trillion budget deficit. There was economic peril everywhere you looked in turn. And now we've had 46 consecutive months of private sector job growth. Over 8 million jobs have been created. That $1.5 trillion in deficits has been reduced to a little less than $500 billion a year, over two-thirds reduction. And clearly the economy, while recovering, isn't where it needs to be, and more work needs to be done. But the president's core idea, I think, is as American as it comes. It's this: if you work hard, you play by the rules, you should have the opportunity to succeed in America. Your ability to get ahead should be determined by your hard work, your goals, your ambition, not by the circumstances of your birth. And the president's going to lay out a set of real, practical proposals to grow the economy, to strengthen the middle class, empower all who hope to join in it. And in this year of action, I think the president's going to seek out opportunities to work with Congress in a bipartisan fashion. But when jobs and the livelihoods depend on getting something done, he's made it clear that he's not going to wait around. In fact, just this morning, he announced that he will, through executive order, increase the minimum wage for workers in federal contracts. This may not have a big effect on workers, many of whom are in federal contracts making above the minimum wage, but it does send the signal that the Congress should act together and increase the minimum wage for the first time since 2007 and help people who are working hard have a better chance of providing for them for themselves, and to exceed their expectations. I would hope, as a member of Congress, that my colleagues will be serious about partnering with the private sector and with this president to do everything we can to get this economy fully functioning and creating good-paying jobs, and do everything we can to ensure that the economic opportunities are afforded to all Americans and that no one is left behind. And so with that, I think the president's going to ask the Congress to increase the minimum wage. He's going to ask us to deal with unfinished business. That's addressing the expiration of long-term unemployment benefits, since the job market isn't where it should be to absorb all the workers looking for it. The investment we have to make in human capital through education and job training skills that can especially help with the skills gap that has developed with jobs that are being created and a lack of skills in the job market to fill them. And what we need to do to better secure our country from global threats and to expand our economic opportunities across the globe. So the president, I think, will be hitting on all those themes. And I look forward to being able to work with him and the rest of my colleagues to do everything we can to revitalize this economy and see good-paying jobs come back to our communities. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions, Peter.
All right, sounds good. I have names written down here, so if you don't mind, I'll just go down the list here, and once I call your name, please give your question. Let's start with Ben at WJFW Television. Ben, you got a question?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Congressman. Fill in the blank. You've probably heard this question before today. Fill in this blank. The state of our union is blank.
Improving. I think it's the most honest assessment. Clearly, the economy is showing a lot of signs of revival. Jobs, as I said, for 46 consecutive months have been created, and the deficit has come down at the fastest rate since the Second World War. But no one should be satisfied, and now is not the time to be taking any victory laps. There's still a lot of hard work to make sure that this economy is working for all Americans and that no one is being left behind.
All right, let's go to Andrew with WRN. Andrew, do you have a question?
Yes, Congressman. I'm just curious, regarding the executive order on raising the minimum wage, how much of an impact regarding federal contract employees does that actually have? I mean, is there any calculation on how many workers that actually impacts?
Yeah, Andrew, great question. I've got the same question pending. I'm waiting to get back some information on who this will impact. I would suspect, given that I've got some military bases in my congressional district, that a lot of service workers at Fort McCoy, Volk Field, that could benefit from this. The truth is a lot of the federal contracts are already paying their employees at or above minimum wage, so it may not be as wide sweeping as some might imagine. I'm glad the president did it. I wish there was a better way for him to work with Congress, who who needs, I think, to be more cooperative on these fronts. But the president, again, has made it clear that if there are things with the authority that he already has that he can do to help the economy and improve the condition of Americans, he's going to do it without having to sit around and wait for Congress, which unfortunately has been more doing more to obstruct economic progress than actually help it along.
All right, Dan at Wisdom in La Crosse. Dan, did you have a question?
Yep, good afternoon, Congressman.
Hi, Dan.
You've already touched on the speech. I kind of want to go off to the right side there just for a minute and get your comments on the new five-year farm bill that looks like there's an agreement.
Yeah, you know, the text became available late last night, Dan. I've been pouring through it, trying to understand everything that's in it. There's going to be a very, very short debate and a vote on it tomorrow morning. And listen, our farmers need a five-year farm bill. They need to know what to expect and what to rely on over the next 5 years. I was hoping that at the end of this very long and tough process, it would be a good farm bill, not a bad farm bill, one that advanced many reforms that I've been calling for years. Get away from these huge taxpayer subsidies going to large agribusiness, which would be more fiscally responsible. Unfortunately, what I have learned thus far today pulls up short. There's going to be a major shifting of so-called direct payments into other subsidy programs. They are establishing record high target prices for commodity crops, so even a slight dip in prices will mean huge taxpayer subsidies going out the door. They don't address the multiple entity rule, meaning that there could be multiple farm managers working the same farm qualifying for the same subsidies. There was a recent report showing how many subsidies went to multi-billionaires in this country who are merely landowners. They're not even farmers. And finally, for the last 4 years, there have been $150 million of annual payments going to subsidize Brazil cotton farmers because of the unwillingness of Congress to reform our own cotton subsidy program. This is crazy. These things are not being addressed or changed. And in light of the deficits that we still face, it makes sense to do it now. But instead, they're going after low-income children and individuals with disabilities with cuts to the food stamp program, making it harder for them to get the nutrition that they need. They're talking about $7 billion worth of cuts in the conservation programs when quality water supply and habitat protection has never been more urgent. So I see this farm bill as a missed opportunity. And if it means delaying a little bit more until we get it right, we should do that because otherwise we're going to see more consolidation in production agriculture, and it's going to continue the squeeze on small and mid-sized family farmers.
And can I follow up with a question dealing with propane? The president's going to be staying in Wisconsin Thursday night. He's going to tour GE, talk about energy. Do you think he's going to deal with the propane issue?
In fact, I'm sending a letter to him this week asking him and the Department of Energy and the other agencies that have some jurisdiction to look into this the situation with rising fuel costs, you know, not just in the upper Midwest, but it's becoming nationwide. I mean, the cold snap has dipped deep into the South. They're caught flat-footed there, too, and we're very concerned with the shortage of supplies that we're seeing out there. And if something can't be done in the immediate short term to address it, we've got to have a long-term plan to prevent this from happening again in the future. And that's what I'll be asking the president to look into in this letter to him.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right, Andy with WIS Politics. Andy, did you have a question?
Hi, Congressman.
Hey, Andy.
You talked a little bit about the president not obviously waiting around for Congress to act, but that they'll look for opportunities to work with them. Do you have any sense right now of what any areas that those might be, of areas where he'll be working with Congress to move things forward rather than executive order?
Well, I would suspect the president will again ask Congress to be serious about fixing the immigration system we have. It's broken. It's not working. It's hurting economic growth and opportunity here in this country. And while the Senate passed their comprehensive bill, nothing has come up in the House so far. There was some encouraging signals that the House leadership is going to introduce some principles on immigration reform this week. They obviously would prefer a piecemeal approach rather than a comprehensive approach. But as long as people are heading in the same direction, recognizing the problems that exist, that could be another area where there's some bipartisan cooperation, but only time will tell. And I also suspect the president will address the importance of a robust trade agenda where we're reducing barriers to the export of our goods and our products, leveling the playing field for our businesses and our workers so we can stay competitive in the global environment, getting core international labor and environmental standards as part of these trade agreements. So we are, in fact, elevating standards across the globe. That could be another area where there could be bipartisan cooperation. So, you know, the president, I think, will be looking closely at some areas where there has been agreement in the past, seeing what we can do to work together in the future. And it should be, again, with the priority of focusing on the economy and getting it growing to where it needs to go.
All right, thanks. Larry in Wausau. Larry, have you joined us?
Yes, I have. Just a little follow-up on a couple things. First of all, any thought of legislation or other action that would curb propane exports, make that supply available in their areas?
Yeah, it's interesting, Larry, but there is a recent report showing that part of the shortage that we're seeing today because of the cold snap has been because of the increase in exports with propane. You know, it's a little interesting because there's a big push on in Washington right now with the natural gas production boom that we're having. Great interest in trying to export that as quickly as it's produced. I'm skeptical and hesitant because that does give us a competitive economic advantage. One of the reasons why we've seen advanced manufacturing jobs coming back and companies coming back to the United States has been the availability of cheaper fuel costs. And if you start exporting that, suddenly you create another global market with insatiable demand for that. And it will only increase prices then at home. So it's going to have to be another factor that the president and others who are serious about finding a long-term solution to what we're going through, we'll have to consider.
The other one would be concerning the president's use of executive orders. You know, we know that the party that has the presidency will support executive orders, and the party that doesn't have it will oppose them, saying it's upsetting the checks and balances. Is there a point where you believe the president might go too far with the executive orders?
It's not the preferred course of action. I would certainly would like to see the president being able to work with a Congress that's more cooperative, and maybe not in agreement on all the issues, but are at least willing to have the conversation. And I think the president over the last 6 years now have seen a Congress that's done a lot to try to prevent any meaningful action from occurring that could help with economic growth and job creation. And so he's going to take a look and see what authority rests within him and what actions can be taken, but he also realizes that this is only short-term. Those orders only last until the next presidency, whoever that is. And therefore, working with Congress, trying to pass something legislatively, is a better long-term solution.
All right, thanks. Maureen at La Crosse Public Radio. Maureen, are you still on?
I sure am. Thanks for talking with us, Congressman. I want to go back to the farm bill. It seems like you're a little concerned that this current version was sent and you all have to decide on it way too quickly. So, and if you are calling for a possible delay in the farm bill yet again, what more could actually realistically be accomplished in this version?
Well, here's two very simple solutions. Reform our cotton program so we don't subsidize Brazil cotton farmers to the tune of $150 million every year. That's what's going on right now, and it's not getting fixed. And that's crazy because I think Brazil now has run out of patience, and they're going to level economic sanctions against us because of this. And the other area is, you know, Representative Petri and I in Wisconsin teamed up to offer a crop insurance reform bill, just asking these private crop insurance companies to put a little more skin in the game. You know, right now, under this farm bill, they're going to be guaranteed a 14% profit. We pay their entire administrative and operating expenses, and they bear virtually no risk. That doesn't make sense at all. There's not a business in the world that wouldn't sign up for that deal. So why are we doing it in this farm bill? So there's some real, I think, common sense measures that we can take, which would be a lot more fiscally responsible to the American taxpayer, that wouldn't distort the marketplace the way these programs do, that we should have the willingness to address. But it's another example of the power of this farm lobby in Washington and how they're successful in circling the wagons and fighting against practical reform.
And regarding the SNAP program, do you think that the $8 billion in cuts is somewhat of a compromise between what the Senate and the House wanted?
Well, those cuts will impact 16 states, Wisconsin being one, because now those cuts are tied into LIHEAP, that's Low-Income Energy Assistance Program, that we do rely upon in Wisconsin. One way to perhaps avert those cuts is by asking the state of Wisconsin to pay a little bit more in the LIHEAP area. That's something that I'm going to explore and recommend to Governor Walker if this farm bill does pass, so that we don't put those individuals dependent on those nutrition programs at a disadvantage. This may be something that the state could fix relatively easier if they're willing to.
All right, thanks. Kristen with WXOW, are you on the phone? I might have dropped Kristen. How about Mike with the Devil's Advocates? Mike, did you have a question? Hello, am I still on?
Nope, I don't think so.
Oh, hello? Hi, is this Mike with the Devil's Advocates?
No, I didn't hear anybody come on. I got in late. This is Ed Anderson, Radio Dubuque in Dubuque, Iowa. I just had a quick question for the congressman.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, Congressman Kine, good afternoon. Ed Anderson here. And I came in when you were talking about the economy. The first question I was asking you, you talked about the economy improving here. But my question is, just yesterday here in Dubuque, we had an Oregon-based company, Gerald Wind. They're going to close in March. 52 people will be out of work. In fact, I believe two, maybe three industries here in Dubuque have either cut back employees or they have shut down altogether. And we just found out, too, that Sears, which is at Kennedy Mall, has been there for almost 20 years, will be closing this year. How do you convince the general public that the economy is improving when these kind of things are happening?
Well, I don't think you have to convince them. I think what they already understand is more work needs to be done in order to strengthen the economy so there are good-paying jobs in all of our communities. And that work is not done yet. And there are steps that can be taken to try to encourage further job growth. I mean, we are in major need of a modernization program for our infrastructure system. That's long overdue. Everyone knows we need to do it. Why not do it now when we need the jobs and get going, lay the foundation for long-term economic growth in this country? Everyone, the businesses I speak to, too, where a lot of jobs are being created, are speaking of a skills gap, that there are jobs being created and a lack of skills in the labor market to fill those jobs. So we need to be creative in how we can work with those businesses and with technical schools and with job centers and in the education system so that those workers are upgrading their skills so they can meet the job openings that are being created. And one of the greatest determinants of any business expanding jobs, creating more jobs, is the ability of a consumer to walk through the door with purchasing power. And that's where making sure that all Americans have economic opportunities to succeed. It's where the minimum wage increase comes in. Because if the consumers don't have disposable income where they can go and purchase the goods and the services that companies in our community are making, they're not going to hire. They're not going to expand. And so all of this focus, I think, on trickle-down economics is missing another half of the important equation, and that's consumer demand, which is 70% of the U.S. Economy.
And do you expect the president to touch on that tonight then?
Yeah, I think he's going to be talking about what we need to do to address the job security needs in this country. How do we increase and revitalize skills in the labor force? But he's also going to be asking Congress to increase the minimum wage for the first time since 2007. If the minimum wage had kept pace with where it was back in 1968, it would be at $10.72 today, not $7.25. So that's a big difference, you know, for people working full time, you know, being able to make ends meet, having that disposable income to make purchases in small businesses in their community.
Thank you, sir.
All right, I think we have James at WKBT. Do we still have you? Did you have a question? I think that might. Is there anybody else that didn't get to ask a question on the line?
Yep, this is Mark Wins at the Tribune.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And that was a good afternoon, Congressman Kind. That was a pretty harsh assessment of the farm bill. Does that mean you're going to vote no?
Yeah, I'm anticipating, based on what I've learned thus far, that it's not worthy of support. There are too many missed opportunities of reforming these outdated subsidy programs. There's a lot of money shifting going on, but no significant reform that could make this more responsible to the American taxpayer and more responsive to the needs of family farmers back home. If this farm bill passes in its current form, you're still going to see most of the ag subsidies going to a few but very large agribusinesses in this country, including multi-billionaires who are merely landowners. They're not even farmers. That's wrong, and that should change. And this is the only opportunity to make that change, you know, for the next 5 years.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everyone. Stay warm back home. Bye-bye.
Thanks, sir.